This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, poems don't need their papers. Almost 20 years ago, Javier Zamora left El Salvador to join his parents in the United States. He was 9 years old. He didn't have a visa, and he was unaccompanied. The experience was harrowing for him and for his family. In the United States, Zamora went to college and started writing poetry. And it turned out he was good at it. In 2017, he published a book called Unaccompanied. He joins me now to read and talk about a few of his poems. Hi, Javier.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. So, Javier, when I emailed you to see if you could do this podcast, I was surprised to hear that you're currently in El Salvador. And I want to ask you about what you're doing there. But first, I thought it would be appropriate right off the bat to get you to read your poem, El Salvador. It's a poem that seems to have been written in the United States.
It's interesting reading this poem because I wrote it over there not having an idea what the reality of my country was. And now I am here.
Yeah.
And at the same time that I'm here, I'm hearing about the situation with the immigrant children in the United States. So it's all about hearing news from outside the place where the news are happening.
Yeah, go ahead and give it a read before we talk too much more about it.
El Salvador. Salvador. If I return on a summer day, so humid my thumb will clean your beard of salt. And if I touch your volcanic face, kiss your pumice breath, please don't let cops say he's gangster. Don't let gangsters say he's wrong barrio. Your barrios stain you with pollen. Every day cops and gangsters pick at you with their metallic beaks and presidents guilty. Dad swears he'll never return. Mom wants to see her mom. And in the news, black bags, more and more of us leave. Parents say, don't go, you have tattoos. It's the law. You don't know what law means there. But what do they know? We don't have green cards. Grandparents say, nothing happens here. Cousin says, here, it's worse. Don't come. You could be stupid Salvador. You see our black bags, our empty homes, our fear to say the war has never stopped. And still you lie and say, I'm fine. I'm fine. But if I don't brush Abuelita's hair, wash her pots and pans, I cry. Tonight, how I wish you made it easier to love you, Salvador. Make it easier to never have to risk our lives.
That was El Salvador. Javier, in the poem, El Salvador is a longed for but very dangerous place. There are gangsters, there are cops on the lookout for gang tattoos, there are black body bags and empty houses. Now that you're back, how does that poem seem in light of the reality of El Salvador today?
Sadly, that's the reality. I live in a rural town, so I'm not in the capital.
Mm-hmm.
When I go to the beach, my cousin and her friends tell me to cover my tattoo because they're afraid that someone will see it. So that's still a reality. And every day there are military personnel that walks up the street in front of my house with M16s. And the police presence is very poignant everywhere in my hometown and in the capital, the 3 times that I've come here. And there are empty homes everywhere, unfinished homes in my town and on the way to the capital. And in the news still, it's not necessarily black bags, but every day there's news about femicide, about there's another body that was killed in the capital or elsewhere. And if it's not that, there's also corruption. So sadly, this poem hasn't, you know, the situation here hasn't changed. And that's why the kids are leaving and everybody's leaving and they're going to continue to leave.
The poem also mentions war. And this is something Americans tend to forget. In the 1980s up till 1992, El Salvador had a brutal civil war that the U.S. was deeply involved in. So how is it that the war has never stopped, as the poem says? How is the war in evidence today?
There's a lot of discussion about what defines war. Mm. Because even before the 1980, a lot of people like to say that the war started then because our archbishop was killed during Mass. But there were conflicts before then. And there has always been violence in the rural areas in my country starting since 1932 and even before then. And then we like to cap the war at 1992 because the peace accords were signed. But soon thereafter, the Bill Clinton policy started deporting a lot of gangsters. And then the gang problem...
From the United States, especially from the Los Angeles area, right.
And around the late 90s, the gangs became a cohesive thing and began to recruit and to kill people. Mm-hmm. I remember in 1996, in front of my house, somebody was killed. And I think that may have been one of the first gang killings in my hometown. But I included that line because here in El Salvador, people don't refer to what is happening as a war, even though more people have been killed in these past few years than during the actual war. So I would define that as a war. We are in a civil war again, just this time it's less concrete and much more undefinable. To me, it looks like a war.
So you're in El Salvador now for the first time since you were 9 years old. That's about 19 years ago that you haven't been back in your native country. What's that like?
I'm still processing. It's very eerie. I expected to cry on the plane. I expected to feel more emotional in a dark way, in a traumatic way than I have felt. I have not felt that trauma. I have felt on the other end of the spectrum like I have to be here. And it's a part of my healing. Hmm. And I don't think I would have understood that without writing poetry. In a way, it's been like living in the poems and being surprised by the reality of my poems, meaning that the words could not capture everything that life is. And I think that I haven't captured joy in these poems because I wasn't joyful in the United States and while writing these poems because I had to write the trauma out of it. Mm. But being here, for example, the very first poem in the book, Abuelita Nelly's Garden, I just posted something on Instagram about taking pictures of my grandma's garden. Mm-hmm. And I'm being surprised by the flowers that I had forgotten were there. I'm surprised by the birds that wake me up every morning at 4 a.m. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised by the smells, by the trees, fruit trees that I forgot to mention, about the position of the well that we still use to shower, you know, all these things.
Your poem mentions your abuelita, your grandmother, and we learn from your book that she was, in fact, the one who raised you because your parents had to leave you behind when they first came to the United States. Is your abuelita still living? And if so, what's her life like?
Yeah, she's here. Uh-huh. I hadn't seen her in 19 years, so that was hard. And perhaps that is the one reminder of the trauma. I just mentioned that it's mostly healing and joy. Mm-hmm. But there's also that reminder of what the violence, what the trauma of war that I describe in the book has affected her. Mm. And in the last poem of the book, I mentioned that my grandma hasn't left the house in years. And I said, it's not a metaphor. And again, I'm reminded because I keep on trying to get my grandma to leave the house. I want to take her to the beach. I want to take her to restaurants. I want to show her a good time because I can now. But she refuses. I've scheduled because I don't have a car here, so I have to schedule rides. I've scheduled rides for her to leave the house. And last minute, she says that her hands hurt or that she doesn't feel well. And it's all trauma.
Yeah.
And that is the sad part of being here and dealing with that. But inside the home, I'm playing music for her. We're having dinner together. We're having conversations. So it's good. Just a reminder that she is afraid to leave the house.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
Your journey as a 9-year-old to the United States sounds terrifying. And your poems tell the story in several different ways. There's one poem that's even a bit surreal with talking furniture in it. Can you tell us a little bit about Guadalajara, that poem?
Recently, we began to talk about the Mexican politics against Central American immigrants. We forget that before immigrants have to go through the U.S. immigration system, they have to encounter the corruption, the hatred, the bigotry done by Mexicans onto Central American bodies. And that is a reality that we're just beginning to speak about, and that I hope more Mexicans take accountability for and responsibility, because their government is not so nice to us. And I think there's a lot of focus on the U.S.-Mexico border, but we're not talking about the Mexico-Guatemala border, which is highly militarized. And that is also a product of U.S. funding. And that militarization is also causing deaths and is funneling people into the hands of gangsters and the gang network, which is not safe. By sheer numbers, since 1999 till I think the statistic ended at 2016, around I think 1,700 people have died at the U.S.-Mexico border. On the contrary, during the exact same amount of time, around 30,000 Central American bodies have died within Mexico.
30,000?
So it's a huge amount of death.
Yeah.
That we're not talking about.
No.
And it's at the hands of Mexicans.
Yeah. So in your trek through Mexico when you were 9 years old, the poem basically says that you spent some time in Guadalajara cooped up in somebody's apartment or house. Is that what happened?
Yep.
Okay. Would you read that poem for us?
Guadalajara. We knew something was wrong when next to the TV, a large tomatillo plant was growing out the carpet. Everything there spoke, table, lamps. In the living room, coffee table's eyes glued to the TV. Flags, drums, hands on the chest on the screen, but it couldn't have been independence. It was the fifth of the fifth month, something about a battle won, a battle lost. Our host, dining table, handed each of us a green sphere. Eat, s'il vous plaît. Don't think about it, she told us. Then sent chair and coffee table to sleep. Watch the bed bugs. You can't unlock the windows, fan in the hallway said. For 2 weeks, table left tomatillos outside our door. The green marbles punched through our stomachs, so deep our ears grew roots. It was as if no heat. Bed wished she was bigger. Closet dreaded his clothes. Wall didn't let us sleep, kept saying, look, look over there, cabrones. You'll never make it there. If you're going to ask for the best route, the best price, where are your suspenders? Dress shoes? You're not really serious about getting to San Francisco, are you? Pinche, dirty pigeons.
That was Guadalajara, which was published in the April 2018 issue of Poetry Magazine. Javier, you mentioned, I mentioned that it was kind of surrealistic, this poem. Why that choice? Why not depict it realistically? Why take that tangent into the talking furniture, which I think is marvelous, but I'm just curious why you went that way.
I think it's because I can't really remember. And I know that I can't remember because my time in Mexico was more traumatic than my traumatic time in the desert. Hmm. And I think that's why surrealism seemed like an appropriate choice, especially because at the time that I wrote this, I was reading a lot of Charles Simic. He writes a lot through surrealism when talking about war. And I think, I forget the title of the book that I was reading, but it's the one that got him the Pulitzer.
Mm-hmm.
And in that book, it's a child speaking, or I think it's a child speaking. And for me, I just borrowed, I was like, wow, surrealism makes a lot of sense, because for a child, the world in itself seems something made up. And I think it seems even more so when the child is pushed against a corner. And for me, it seemed the appropriate choice regarding the room, the apartment that I was housed in Guadalajara for 2 weeks.
Yeah, everything comes to life. And the furniture seems to be also other people, other kids, perhaps, in your situation. They seem to have personalities and are frightened and are worried. It's very effective. So in the United States, right now, we're in a tumultuous time politically, as everybody knows. And immigration is the polarizing issue, to put it mildly. The U.S. government has been separating children from parents at the border, and many parents don't even know where their children are. How does all this appear from El Salvador? What are people saying in El Salvador right now about what's happening in the United States?
I will answer that by what I watched on TV last night.
Okay.
My grandma and my cousins, they watched this novella, primetime, from 7 to 8. At around 8, every channel queued to an announcement. It was an announcement by the U.S. Embassy celebrating the 153 years of independence, I don't know, celebrating that on Salvadoran TV. And first it was the Salvadoran national anthem. Then it was the U.S. national anthem. And then the ambassador at the U.S. embassy here spoke. It felt weird for me to see this in this country that uses the U.S. dollar as its currency. Whenever you go to the capital, it's mostly U.S. fast food companies, chains, that are all over San Salvador. It has all the characteristics of a pseudo, I don't know if I should use the word, but a pseudo colony.
Hmm.
And what the ambassador said, explained that they're doing everything they can to reunite the children. And they even also showcased a new program to help kids dissuade them from joining gangs here in El Salvador. That is part of the surreality, going back to that word, of the situation, because clearly my government, the Salvadoran government, does not know how to deal with the violence, with the corruption, because it is corrupt itself. And clearly the U.S. government does not know how to deal with this situation. And I think there's some accountability on both governments, the Salvadoran government to say, you know what, we don't know what we're doing. This is out of control. I think honesty could be the beginning of fixing this. And also accountability by the U.S. government to say, you know what, our old policies kind of created this problem. So let's try to fix it in a new way. Let's think of new solutions, not using the same solutions that we used during the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Every day, there's another news of the children, and I heard the recording here.
Yeah.
I'm reading the New York Times, and it's weird to be outside of the United States as this is happening, but it's also weird, I suppose, being in the United States as this is happening. And I think if it may feel like how I feel about being in my country, I laugh at how the Salvadoran government deals, or more correctly, is not dealing with the problem of children leaving. I don't know. And I'm not pretending to have the answers to the problem, but what I see is not the right way.
You know, it's a problem not only in Central America, it's a problem throughout the world, because we have more refugees in the world now than at any time since World War II. And it looks like the problem is only going to get worse with climate change or whatnot. Do you feel a responsibility as a poet with an audience in the United States to keep telling the story? You're, after all, a former refugee yourself.
I do. I just feel a responsibility to hold people and governments accountable. And I think poets and writers are always truth seekers. And I'm just an honesty seekers. I just want honesty. And I just want people to talk with an honest language about what is happening. Yeah, I think that's as far as my responsibility goes. And I think I write from a personal strain because I don't pretend to know the situation of every Salvadoran or every immigrant. I only know mine and my family's. I think that's how I approach this problem that's going to be the problem of the 21st century. So I think we have to think of a better solution. And writers are also dreamers. I think we have to dream up a world in which a solution is possible.
Javier Zamora, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Javier Zamora is the author of Unaccompanied. You can read a handful of his poems that have been published in Poetry Magazine on our website. We love getting emails with your comments and suggestions. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org or write a review of the podcast in Apple Podcasts. And please link to the podcast on social media. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.